All right, welcome everyone to the first edition, the very first episode of Laughing at Funerals. I am Ryan McChesney. Peace be with you. Look, this must be what it feels like to experience childbirth. This must be what it feels like to have that experience of a baby coming into this world, because this is my baby. This is me. First off, I just, with this podcast, Laughing at Funerals, it's pretty much how I deal with grief, is that I go in to different funerals. Well, I don't just like actually like walk in to random funerals. It's usually, I've had both my parents pass away and my grandparents pass away, and at those funerals, the way that I dealt with things was I had to crack jokes. I had to really kind of just see the humor side in different people. Like my grandpa passed away, and he was like 90-ish, and he had the Shriners come down, and they all walked down. And I remember as they were walking down to do their thing, I forgot exactly what they did. They just kind of did this like ritualistic weird thing, and you know, God bless them. I thought they were cool, but they were, and they all walked down, and it was so quiet. And they all were just like marching down the aisle of the church, and all I did was go, oh wee oh, oh wee oh, oh wee oh, oh wee oh, because that's what I was thinking at that time. So I guess I don't have a filter. But I have to do that in order for me to kind of get through that, because otherwise, I don't know. I don't really want to know what I would be like if I didn't cope like that. I would think I'd be just incredibly, incredibly miserable. And at my grandma's funeral, we had this lady at my grandma's funeral. I remember she was, and go on the timeline of the different deaths and everything, but at my grandma's funeral, this lady, she was just, like, barking orders at me. Like, I got yelled at both my grandparents' funerals. It was mainly my grandma's funeral. The lady, we had this one lady, like, yell at me, because I was asking her, hey, can we put this CD in to the, like, I had got this, like, CD, or I had got this, on my phone, I had developed a playlist of songs that I wanted to play at my grandma's funeral. And I told this lady at the church, I was like, hey, you know, would you mind if you plug it in? She's like, no! That's exactly how she sounded. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to do it anyway. Like, she's like, don't touch that. You're not allowed to touch that. And I was like, okay, well, let me. So I went down there, and I went in the back area. I went to the sanctuary, and I went to the back area where the music was. And I started to, with my brother, started to kind of plug it in the iPhone so it would be able to play. So that everybody could hear it, because I put a lot of effort into the planning of my grandma's funeral and the music list, because I wanted this to be a joy or a celebration of my grandma. And the lady comes in, and she sees me. She comes into the sanctuary, and she sees me, and she immediately goes, get out of there! And we're, like, everybody is, we're getting ready for my grandma's funeral, and I look at her, I'm like, not today. And I was like, thank you for your hospitality. And that's what I said to her sarcastically, and I wanted to say a lot more. And my brother went up and apologized to her. I don't know why he did that. I still don't know why he did that. Because she was just so... That was just so... She was way off base on that. Way off base with that. I mean, who goes and yells at somebody? And I told her that. I was like, look, we're at my grandma's funeral. You're yelling at me for some stupid reason. All right? What is wrong with you? That's what I said to her. I was like, what is wrong with you, lady? And she... And I don't remember ever seeing her again after that. But, like, I just know my brother went and apologized to her. And then we had this other lady who my mom, the Shriners, who belonged to the Shriners or the Eastern Star Group or whatever she belonged to. The head of the Eastern Star, which is like a, I don't really know what that is, actually. It's a group. It's a group of old ladies. And they this, she was directing me. She was like, people want to talk to you. People want to talk to you, so line up here so they can all get into it. No, line up here, Ryan. And so I was like, what do you mean here? No, here. What do you mean here? No, Ryan, right here. And at this point, I'm just like messing with her. I'm like, what if I stood right here? Well, if you stand right here, they can't really see you. People want to talk to you, Ryan. I was like, well, that's good. Like, I wanted to talk to people at that time. That's the weirdest thing, too, is that I don't really like to do the whole, like, it's not a wedding, you know, I don't like to do the whole line of funeral thing where, like, people have to, like, come by and they want to talk to you, because usually end up people, you know what happened, especially, like, with my grandparents, and, well, actually, with everybody that I've funerals that I've been to, all my family members, is that they just start crying to you. And it's like, that puts you in a better mood. I was like, yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And so this one guy who was friends with my grandma, he came up to us and he was like, I just want to thank you. We just miss them so much. We just miss them. And I don't want to make light of that, but I'm sitting here going, I didn't know what to say to that. It's put me in an awkward position because, you know, I'd kind of gone through this stage of grief. Like, I'd come to terms with that, I guess. And he was just bawling all over me. So I had to give him a hug, and I didn't really know the guy. And it was really awkward. And he was, and then his wife came up and did the same thing. Like, we just went on so many trips with them. And they want to project to you all their, like, stories of the grandparents or the family members. And there is a place for that, but I just remember, especially when it came down to my grandparents, I was like, I don't really know you people, nor do I really have a desire to have a conversation with you people, and I don't want to be rude or anything, but, like, when you're standing in, like, the line of death, the funeral line where people want to come and they give you their condolences, it's awkward, because you, and I end up saying, like, the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. Like, yeah, like with my grandma, I was like, yeah, she's with grandpa in heaven, yeah. And then people come up, yeah, she was a wonderful lady. Yeah, I remember you. I remember you when you were this little. It's like, yeah, you know, I grew up a little bit. Yeah. 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 Well, I'm going to miss your grandma. Yeah, she's great. She's a wonderful lady. She's in heaven now. Yeah. 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 Next guy. Oh, me and your grandma, we had so much fun playing bingo together. Yeah. 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 She's a wonderful lady. She's in heaven right now. And that was my standard with my grandma. Was she's a wonderful lady. She's in heaven now with grandpa. With grandpa, it was more of a, like, my grandpa was a character. So I actually love to hear this. Like, your grandpa, oh my god! Like, the ladies that would come up, your grandpa, oh, he was all hands. I was like, yeah, he was. He did that. Yeah, he was. Oh, I just loved him. I'm gonna miss him. The way that he had such a beautiful voice too. Yeah, he was great. Yeah, he's in heaven now. That was my thing. Yeah, he's in heaven now. You know, God bless him. I love the guy. He's in heaven. You know, doing whatever he's doing in heaven. You know, that's what I take comfort in that. You always have to. I always have to preface that by saying I take comfort that he's in heaven. And, I mean, I generally do, but, like, when you're in the funeral line, when people want to talk to you, you just have to have your standard responses ready. Yeah, I take comfort that he's in heaven right now. With my dad, it was, honestly, I guess it was a little bit more of a somber tone, because my dad, you know, nobody expected that to happen with him. He passed away, and I'll get to how he died later. But with my dad, he passed away. We didn't expect that. So people were shocked. But my thing, and actually, honestly, it did help me out here, was I was like, you know what? He's with mom in heaven, or he's in heaven right now. He believed in God. He believed in Jesus. And so I did take solace in that. It wasn't just like lip service. I was actually saying, to that. I did take solace. I did have that comfort that my dad was in heaven. And you know, I had a lot of questions though, and I'll get into that later, but he wasn't, and he was in heaven, and he was a genuinely good man, that I loved. He was an awesome dad. And my mom, with my mom, it was, honestly, I would tell people, I'm just so glad she's not suffering anymore. I'm glad that she's not suffering. And it was one of those things where it's, I'm glad that God did take her home when he did. Because I just hated to see her suffer. She died of breast cancer. My mom died the first. My mom died when I was 28. And then my dad passed away a couple years later. And then right after that, my grandparents passed away. My dad passed away. My mom passed away from breast cancer. She had a long struggle with that. It first started when I was in high school. And then it kind of became this thing where it went into remission. And I don't know the science behind this, but I was always told when it goes into remission for like 5 years, then, you know, there's a chance it's gone forever. It's not coming back. But it did. It went for like 6 years. It went into remission. Actually, I think more than that. Yeah, around 6 or 7 years. It went into remission six or seven. And I wasn't worried about that anymore. And then it was Christmas time, and it was always around Christmas time when these things happened with my mom. It was Christmas time, and we had just got done celebrating, you know, the holidays, and she was crying with my dad in the kitchen, and I thought I'd just come back home from Chicago, so I didn't know what was going on. So I was like, "Hey, what's going on?" And my dad could barely get out that my mom's cancer had come back, and it had come back in her bones. And at that time, I just thought, wow, I was completely in shock. There's no way to, the one thing I didn't want to do is I didn't want to start bawling in front of my mom. So I waited a little bit, cause you know, they were emotional about it. My brother was emotional, and I wanted to be strong, but I also was completely stunned and completely saddened to beyond belief to hear that this was going to be a struggle again for my mom. And I immediately just went up to my room and started crying, and because I just was like, what is this? What's going on here? And at that time, I was a firm believer in God. I was a firm believer in Jesus. And so I went to Bible study, and I had them all pray for my mom. And it was definitely difficult for me to process that again. Now, I had always had held out hope for that, and I'll get to that later. But yeah, I had kind of it was a struggle. It was a struggle. I couldn't believe it. I was about to become a father for the first time. I was nervous and anxious, and I was going to be a father to a baby kidney stone. I was in pain. I was in such bad shape in the ER. I had to go to the ER. I was in such bad shape that an old guy in a wheelchair in the ER looks at me and goes, "Hey kid, is there anything I can do to help you out?" And I was like, I just started, like, I was, like, nauseated everywhere, and I didn't exactly know what was happening. And so the nurse took me in, and she was like, "I just want to ask you a few questions. And, where does it hurt?" I'm like, "Well, there! How long have you been experiencing this pain?" "It's too long." Are your parents around?" "No, they're both dead." And I was like, what kind of line of question? That's weird. And I later found out everybody asked that. And the nurse looked at me and she was like, "Wow, you seem pretty young to have both your parents pass away and be dead already." I was like, yeah, Thank you. I'm sure I'm in incredible pain right now, so I appreciate you easing my physical pain by also now giving me all this spiritual pain that I've had to experience. Is this like a new roundabout pain medication to make me forget about my pain by depressing me? Thank you. I appreciate that. And then she was like, what happened to them? And I'm thinking, well, you know, she is cute, so I can kind of use this as the Florence Nightingale effect here. But I answered. I was like, she said as she was typing, she was like, what happened to them? And I was looking at her going, you know, she is pretty cute, and I can kind of use this angle to, like, for, like, the Florence Nightingale effect here. And I was like, my mom passed away from breast cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know. I never knew how to respond to that when people told me sorry. So I'm just like, thank you. I mean, honestly, my mom, she was a rather small lady, and she carried so much authority, and she knew it too. Scared the crap out of me. My first name growing up was Oh My Gosh, because she would always go around saying, Oh My Gosh, Ryan, whenever I would upset her. And during report card time, it was a glare followed by, Oh My Gosh, Ryan. But still. And I was also really bad, honestly, about changing my grade. I was awful at it. Like, it was clearly, like, I would try to change, like, an F to, like a B. And it never worked. It was, like, I would have, like, different colors to it. So it was, like, a different color. The F was a different color than the B that I would try to change it to. So I was just really bad at it. But that didn't stop me, because I did it semester after semester. And Mom would look at me, and she would look at the grades, and she would look back at me, and she would look at me. And she would say, Oh my gosh, Ryan, what are you doing all day in school? Huh? Excuse me, I will not be lied to. I'm like, yeah, I know, Mom. I know. I'll do better, Mom. I'll do much better. Mom, I'm smart. Let's look at your grades here. Yeah. Oh, Mom, the grading system's different than when you were in school. That D, that means I'm diligent. Huh?
Oh, Ryan Clark, I cannot believe you, Ryan. What are you doing all day in school?
Yeah, I know, Mom. I need to apply myself. I know that I'm smart. I know that I've taken it upon myself to ground myself for a week. And I always thought that would work. It never did. It never did.
Well,
and she was like, my mom looked at me and was like, yeah, okay, well,
that's good, because I've also grounded you for a week.
Oh, so you're grounding me for a week as well, huh? So that's 2 weeks. Yeah, so that's a month.
Well, very good. See, you're not so mad at bat. Very good. See, you're not so bad at math as it says here on the report card, huh? You're learning. Oh, and you know what? Your dad, he's going to come home, and he's going to have a punishment as well.
Oh, so Dad has something in store for me as well? I'm sorry. I love you, Mom. Mom? Mommy? I used to plan on how I was going to show my mom my grades. My parents, actually, I would sit, like, the bus ride home was just me, like, coming up with, like, different kind of scenarios of how I could show her the grades. Like, you know, all right, first off, you know, maybe let my brother, yeah, what do you do, you know, what do I do, what am I thinking, okay, well, you know, JC's smart, let him show her the grades first, and then, you know, get them in a good mood, and then I'll show my grades, and, you know, we can have a therapy session after that. I don't know, what, what if I came in with a joke? What if I came in with a knock-knock, who's there? Me. I don't know any knock-knock jokes. So I'm standing outside the door, you know, back to my house, going, planning this. My mom sees me, and my mom's like, Ryan, come on in. And I'm like, okay. And there was this one time where I actually, like, I had everything planned out, and I had done really bad in school. And I was not, this, I was in, like, my freshman year, or maybe middle school. Let's go with middle school on this one. So, I was in middle school, and I was like, oh, yeah, you know, I gotta find a way to tell them, because I had just gotten, like, I don't, probably, like, maybe two D's, and I, my highest grade was, like, a B, and then maybe a C in there, and so I had not done well, and I was just like, all right, I gotta come up with something here. I gotta come up with a story, you know, and so I was struggling the bus ride all the way home. I was like, all right, come up, you know, you gotta come up with some material here that you need to get them on your side. So I ended up going to my house, being dropped off, and just knees were shaking, and I'm at the front door going, hi, hey, can I come in? And my mom's like, yeah, come on in. Hey, by the way, good news. Your dad got the job that he wanted. So we're going to go out and celebrate. You could change, but, you know, go ahead, and we're going to go out and celebrate here in a few minutes. Oh, good. Yeah. Yeah, so we're going to celebrate. Let me see your report card. Oh, okay. Here, Mom, I know I'm improving. Oh my gosh, Ryan. Well, you can't get any worse. Of course you're going to, like, honey, you have to stay after school or something, okay? Goodness. Okay. Okay, now let's go celebrate. We'll deal with this later. Wow. That was that. I done it. The miracle in McChesneyville, as it has been known in my house, or pretty much just by me. But yes, I did it. I'd won the grades. I'd won over my, and I think I actually did improve on that time period. Really? Who's calling me right now? Okay, you jerks. Sorry. Yeah, so I. Oh my gosh, Ryan. Is what they would say. My mom, oh my gosh. And Christmas time was really fun around my house too. Like, I have a lot of great Christmas memories with my parents. My mom was a great gift giver, but there was one time, one year, where my mom, she asked me what I wanted for Christmas, and I said I wanted a Beastie Boys CD, and she's like, oh, I love them. And I'm like, yeah, that's weird, but okay. All right, cool. Thanks, Mom. So Christmas time came, and I'm opening up the presents, and I get to the one where you could tell it's a CD because it's wrapped like a CD and looks like a CD, and I open it up, and I'm going, oh, the Backstreet Boys. And my mom, she's like taking pictures with her camera. She's like, is that the group that you like? Here, hold it up. Yeah, Mom. Yeah, it is. Thank you. And it was around Christmas time, my junior year in high school. I was a junior, actually, but everybody thought I was a freshman. Check that. Everyone thought I was a really smart sixth grader. I was laying on my couch watching Fresh Prince of Bel-Air on TV, and I got a call from my doctor. I got a call from a doctor, not my doctor. But he was like, is Mrs. McChesney around? I'm like, no, this is their son, but can I leave a message? Yeah, well, just tell her that the results of her mammogram have come back, and to have us, have her give us a call back. I was like, oh, okay, all right. And I'm thinking, mammogram? Well, what is that? I think that means I'm going to be a big brother again. Wow. You know, I kind of like that. I'm excited. A few days later, my mom came home, and I was watching TV on the couch. I was watching actually Fresh Prince again. The common theme here. And she came home and she was crying, and my dad went over to her and they hugged. And I'm thinking, what's wrong? I asked, and then they went into the kitchen, and I imagined my mom's mammogram had come back positive or whatever it meant, you know, that, and I was thinking, I'm gonna be a big brother again. I was thinking, you know, that would be pretty cool to be a big brother again. I gotta be honest. I was excited about that. I was excited that I was gonna be a big brother again. I was ready to assure my parents that I would be there for them, to help them out. "What's wrong?" I ask. But knowing the answer, my dad set me down, me and my brother down, and he said, Your mom has breast cancer. And everything was silent. Oh, wait, what? You're kidding. Are you serious? My brother asked. And I'm just thinking, I kind of wish I was going to be a big brother again. This isn't fun. I felt terrible. And that was the first time, like I said earlier, that was the first time in my life that I actually felt empathy for someone and wasn't consumed with how everything was going to affect me, but how I could help this person who I loved. How must she feel? What must she be going through? I never really prayed at that point in my life. My prayer life was always like, God, if you just answer me this one question, he's like a genie from Aladdin. Like, oh, no, God, if you just ask me this, like, one thing, if you just give me this one thing, I'll never ask for anything again. Like, that's exactly how God worked life. So I did that, and I was like, I didn't have any relationship with God, actually. I didn't really care. I didn't have I had a huge actually run-in with the church when I was really young, and I didn't like the church. I honestly never really felt embraced by the church, because especially when I was younger, because I was always this like really artistic guy, I think it honestly was a poor self-image on my end. Poor self-image and the fact that I never really got any attention from the girls there, so it was like, whatever. A few years later, I had moved to Chicago. My mom's cancer had gone into remission. And I was at this point, I'd become a Christian. And I'll kind of get into how I became a Christian a little later, if we have time in the show. I'd become a Christian at this point. And I'd started going to church, and I'd go into a church in Chicago. It was really cool. It's a Moody church. I love that church. I kind of grew up spiritually there, honestly. And my friends, we all had a prayer night where we would just sit down and we would pray. And it was a Friday night. It was really cool. Like, I don't know. I can remember like it's yesterday, actually. And I don't know why we stopped doing that, but it was really, really cool. And for whatever reason, they had me play worship music there. Now, I always play music for comedy. If you've seen my stuff, I do it for comedy effect. I'm not exactly the greatest musician in the world. And so at that point, I was just kind of like, you know, playing. And I kind of was just playing. I didn't really know what I was playing, but I was, it was really awkward because I was playing, "How great is our God? Sing with me, how great is our God? You'll always see how great is our God." And my voice would change because that's kind of how I do songs, is that I kind of all over the place vocally. And it's like Adam Sandler trying to lead worship there. And everybody around me was going, What song is he singing? I don't know, but let's just, I don't know, just bow our heads, whatever. And I was just like, okay. It was really weird, but the thing I remember about that night was we had all gathered around, and we had all, like, kind of prayed in a circle, and this one lady, she prayed for me, and I felt really great. She prayed. I would have everybody at that point, like at that point, my mom's cancer had been in remission, but it had come back actually. Yeah, it had come back, and she was not doing well. She was in and out of the hospital. So I was just having everybody I know pray for my mom at that time. And I remember during that prayer, I was like, oh, this is great. It's in God's hands right now. This is going to be awesome. Like, whatever happens, man. Like, I mean, it's just, I felt comfortable leaving it in God's hands. Like, it was a comfort that I'd never felt before. And so I left that feeling good. And then the next day I get a call from my dad, and I'm laying on the couch watching Fresh Prince in my apartment in Chicago. And he's like, "Hey, pal." I'm like, "Dad, how's it going?" And my dad, he would just go on and on and on. And
about what he was doing. He's like, well, finished washing dishes, or washing dishes. He was one of those people, though, if you ask him what he was doing, he would spend an hour, like, telling you exactly what he was doing. I took a shower. They finally got rid of that. I finally got rid of that hangnail, Ryan. Oh, Ryan, it hurt. I fed the dog, sat here, ate some biscuits that I made. A couple minutes later, after he was done talking about how he, what he did that day in detail by detail, he went into what he was going to do in detail by detail at the rest of the day. And he's like, well, I'm thinking about buying a new mirror for the bathroom. And then he finally got the white called. So we're still planning on having you over for Thanksgiving, but this year, Ryan, but I gotta tell you that your mom, she's not getting any better, and she's not gonna get any better. I was like, you're joking, right? Like, no, pal. I'm not. I wish I was. I really, really wish I was. I'm like, wow, that sucks. That's all I could get out. We had just prayed the night before, and I was thinking, really? Really, God? Are you kidding me with this? I have no words. I'm almost afraid to pray about anything. I don't even want to talk to you right now, God. Oh, I mean, what happened here? Like, I felt good the night before. Why are you doing this to me? And I remember God saying, Ryan, what do you want? And I'm thinking, no, I'm not doing this with you, God. I'm not doing this with you right now. Ryan, what do you want? No, I want answers. Ryan, what do you want? I wanted you to heal my mom. And God was like, I am. And it took me a while to realize what he meant by that, honestly. My mom, she was a funny lady. She had never stopped being my mother. Just a month before she passed, it was Thanksgiving. She was bedridden, actually, at that point, and I was going to pick my grandparents up at my house, or at their house. I was going to pick them up, and my sister-in-law, for whatever reason, like, my sister-in-law came along. I don't know why. I don't know why Kristen came along, but she was there, and I was like, okay. So I drove, and I lived in Chicago at that time and hadn't driven for a while. And I had seen people in Chicago drive, so I thought, well, yeah, this will be fun. And I had driven, and I had, like, we had not even got out of the parking lot, or not even got out of our subdivision, and Chris was like, oh, Ryan, oh my gosh, oh, you're making me sick with this driving. And I'm listening to music, la la la, la 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 radio, and I was like, yeah, and I'm paying attention, I'm cranking the music. She's like, no, Ryan, pay attention to the radio, and I'm like, I am. See, I thought she was actually just joking with me, because I was just, I don't know, I thought she was joking with me. And when we got to my grandparents' house, and we got to pick them up, it was like trying to get a sack of potatoes in the car. It was an experience trying to get them out in the car, and it was like life size, like, cardboard cutouts trying to move them into the car. And then my sister, after we had done that, my sister's like, okay, give me the keys. I'm like, what? Like, give me the keys. You made me sick down the way here. I'm driving on the way back. I'm like, what? Yeah, I'm giving her that voice, by the way. And I was like, well, that's a little harsh, I thought. But then I could see she was turning green. And all right, fine. She drove us back to our place, and I thought I thought that was the end of that. When we got back and I ate and went into my mom's room to see how she was doing, she's like, hey, Mom, I was like, hey, Mom, are you hungry? Can I get you anything? No, I'm good, honey. Thank you. Hey, honey, maybe you shouldn't drive for a while. At least till you get your eyes checked. Wait, what? Why would you say that? Well, I'm just worried about you and your driving. Kristen said you were kind of struggling driving today.
Mom, I'm fine. I did fine. Mom, what are you talking about? I'm fine.
Sorry, checking, struggling here. I'm just worried about your driving, right?
Mom, I was fine.
I want you to go to the doctor. Mom!
No, Mom.
In that moment, I had completely forgotten this lady was sick, and I went back to 15-year-old Ryan.
Mom, I'm fine, Mom. I am going to the doctor. I have an appointment next month. I'm going to get contacts, Mom.
I'm just worried about you driving. Maybe Chase can take you.
Mom, I'm okay. I'm driving while I'm here, Mom. It's my life, Mom. It's my life.
Oh, my gosh, Ryan.
That's how it was, too, man. That was fun. I had kind of, like, prepared myself for my mom's passing at that point, and spending that last moments with her was one of the joys of my life. Seeing her with so much grace that she had, more grace than anybody that my pastor Francis at our church said that she had dealing with this illness that she was dealing with. She had so much grace with that. But it was weird. And it was, I not prepared myself for, like, when my mom was in the hospice house, I remember thinking, meh, you know, I just kind of want to make her laugh. I just kind of want to go in and make her laugh. I didn't exactly know the full weight of what was going on, especially with my family at that time. I didn't know what was happening. I thought, man, excuse me, take some water. It's okay, I can take some water, right? I didn't know what was happening there. I didn't really know. So I went back to Chicago after Thanksgiving, and I didn't really know that was probably the last time that my mom would really be cognizant of me and where I was, and I was doing a play, and I'd found out that my mom was going to be in the hospice care, and I didn't exactly know what that meant, but I knew that she probably wasn't going to come back home, and I knew that was probably going to be it for her. And I have this rule in my life that I never cry in front of women, ever under any circumstances. I never cry in front of females. And I worked at the Chicago Lakeshore Medical Associates at that time period. And it was December 10th. I'll never forget it. It was December 10th. And I got a call from my dad. And I actually, by the way, set this up again. I work with a lot of females here. And so I always had this like masculine rule. Hey, don't ever show, you know, don't ever cry in front of women. Also, you know, never reveal your feelings to them. Never tell them that you love them on the first date. And all those I think I've broken, but yeah. So anyways, I'm working at this place, and I am doing stuff in the mail room, and I get a call from my dad, and he said, and he's crying. And I didn't really know. I don't know why I said hey yeah, but my dad was crying. I didn't know what was happening. I thought hello, and he's like hold on. And so I got to speak with my mom, and my mom was like I'm gonna go be with Jesus, and she was telling me all these things. It was really sweet, and it was really difficult, because I hated to have that conversation with my mom, and. My dad took the phone back from her, and he was crying, and he was like, you know, they don't think she's going to make it past today. No, I just had a show that night. I was going to be in a show that night that was going to be premiered. And I thought, oh my gosh, what's going on here, man? What's going on here? And I told him, I was like, I have a show. I got it. Like, what's going on here? Are you serious? And so I ended up getting like the first flight out of there because I didn't want to, I wanted to be serious. I wanted to make sure that everything was there. I wanted to be there for my mom. And come to find out that the doctor never really said that to him. My dad was going through a lot of difficult times. And honestly, it was at that time. I saw my mom there at the hospice, and she just wasn't looking good. I remember, I don't know who it was, but like my Uncle Danny, who just loves to kind of take charge of everything, he was kind of like, hey, Ryan, you want to, spend a few moments alone with mom? And I'm thinking, well, okay, yeah, I do. And I remember just thinking to my mom and saying, man, I wish that, I would have given you grandkids by now so you could see them because you'd be such a great grandmother. And my just then, as I was walking in, or as I was doing that, a nurse walks in. And I'm about to, and I'm losing it. I'm crying. And I'm like, and a nurse walks in, and she's attractive. And I'm going, oh, man. And, oh, man. I just completely, lost it right there. I was like, oh, yeah, just everything. And I'm, crying in front of this nurse who, maybe I could have asked her out. I don't know. I don't know the protocol of when to ask somebody out. I don't think it's when your mom is in hospice care. But who knows, I don't think that's it. But I was going, she was like, are you okay? And like, no. And sure, I did get a hug out of it, so that was kind of cool. But yeah, that was an emotional moment for me because I had just lost it at that point. I had all of that emotion that I was holding up came out of me, and it was really therapeutic, actually, just to get that all out. But I hope I'd kind of known that. I just wanted her to go. I was like, I want this to be as smooth as possible and easy as possible. What I didn't know was exactly how my dad was going to deal with it. I could see signs of him struggling with stuff. And I honestly, to this day, I still kick myself for not acting on certain things that I saw. I think I did, but he wasn't the best caretaker for my mom, as I found out as I was in the hospice house. As my mom, we had sedated my mom at that point to where she wasn't going to wake up anymore, because we didn't. Every time my mom would wake up, she'd be fearful of my dad. And I honestly, I couldn't process this. I couldn't process this thing of like what's going on here. I couldn't imagine that there was some issue between the two of them at that time. I could not. I was like, okay, well, I don't know what's going on. My mom's just seeing things, and I think it's the drugs. Come to find out, though, my dad wasn't the best caretaker for my mom. And when I found that out, one of my family members sat me down and said, "Hey, your mom's not, your dad isn't the best caretaker to your mom." And I thought, "Oh, what?" He's like, "Why?" Well, because he's lost in alcohol, Ryan. And I was like, "What?" Because at that point, my mom was, looking at me, and she would always see me, and she'd always start crying. And I thought, well, maybe it's me. And look, I could have done something earlier, but at that point, I was thinking, this is really late in the game for me to know about this. And there was an anger there that I had. I was like, why am I being told this late? And I know that people say, well, your mom wanted you guys to, but I was like, that's, you got to think about us too, man. We deserve to know that. And I was a little frustrated at that point, but I was so angry at my dad, because it turns out my dad was abusing my mom and not taking care of her at all, hardly, really. And had I known that some certain things, and I still don't know the nature of everything that was going on, because I was living in Chicago at the time. I had seen some things in my own that I thought were kind of weird. But I didn't think of that it was to the point of my dad being a really bad caretaker and my mom suffering the way that she did. And I was angry, and I looked at my dad when my dad came in the hospice. I looked at him, and I wanted to punch him. I was like, I could strangle this guy right here. I could strangle him right here. I had enough anger in me to just beat the crap out of, you could have put me up against UFC fighters at that point, and I would have taken him down. I was so mad. And I had to find a way to release it. And, you know, I talked with my pastors about it. And I talked to my uncle who, you know, they all kind of, I don't want to say like calmed me down, but also kind of helped me deal with my anger and what I was going through, because I was angry. I was angry at my dad. I was angry that he did these things to my mom. And I was angry that I didn't know about it. I was angry that he thought that I wouldn't find out. I was angry this was being allowed to happen. I was angry at God. And I remember at that point, this one thing that God kept on revealing to me, because I was like, man, how do I react to this? Because I don't really want to talk to my dad right now, honestly. Like, I'm man. You know, I don't really want to talk to him. And God was like, yeah, well, because I forgave you, you need to forgive him. And not only do you need to forgive him, but you can't abandon him right now. That would make things worse, Ryan. And I thought, okay, yeah, that's, it was loud and clear, and God put it on my heart to not want to abandon him. He put it on my heart to want to help him out with his addiction to alcohol. And I mean, I don't think anybody would have blamed me for kind of just saying, see you later, and being just really not having a relationship after that with him. But it wasn't what God wanted. It wasn't what my dad needed. And it wasn't what I wanted to do. So I made it a point to be there for my dad at that point and not want to strangle him. Now, there's times where I still, like, the anchor would come back, but that wasn't exactly wasn't exactly the type of I never acted on it. So yeah, my dad He really put a lot of stress on me and my brother with that, honestly. And I really, honestly, I was pretty frustrated with him. And I kind of want to find out, like, because, you know, my mom died. She had cancer. And her cancer to me, like, watching her go through that and watching the way that she dealt with everything and her disposition, She was so sunny. She had such a sunny disposition, and she was so good about it. Or she was so, like, she dealt with it with so much grace that I was like, man, I can't imagine myself dealing with that. Like, I can't, like, imagine my life and how I would deal with that. That's just something to me that I just don't ever think that I can deal with. So that was my mom's funeral. My gosh, there was like, at my mom's funeral, there was like 700 people there. There was a lot of people there. The first funeral that I ever went to was my Aunt Shuni's when I was like 17. And I never, well, I think it was. Was it? Yeah, I'll just say that was the first one that I remember. And for whatever reason, they had a freaking open casket to my Aunt Shuni's funeral. That was weird. That was awkward. Who wants to do an open casket? I can't imagine. Although I do. Like, I would, because I wouldn't care. I'd be like, all right, you're looking at me. I'm freaking you all out. But my Aunt Shuni, she was like 85 when she passed away. Like, when I was 17, and honestly, I thought that she was going to go for like 5 years. And I was like, oh, well, she finally went, and, you know, it's sad, but man, you know, she was not looking good there. And I couldn't believe when I walked in, there was this lady who me and my brother, when we walked in, there was this lady who ran right up to us and said, she just loved you guys. And she was a scary looking lady. And I come to find out, like, it was my Aunt Karen. And I never really like known her. But my gosh, she was really awkward. And so she, her and my grandma, like, drug us up to the open casket, and like, I'm like looking at this, going, what are we? Okay. And she's like, pay your my grandma was like, pay your respects. She loved you guys. And I'm going, okay. I respect you. I don't know what else is that. Did I do that okay? Did I pay my respects? What can I go now? No, she just loved you guys. And then my aunt, who again, like, looked like a clown, she had this like weird curly, like, dark hair. She looked like she was just really awkward looking and really freaking me out. She's like, she loves you. And I was like, yeah, I understand that. But can I stop staring at this dead body right now? Tell her you love her. Tell her you give her a kiss. And she was like, and I was like, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. Really? And so I, me and my brother, we like left, and I don't know why they made us do that. That was just really weird. And then that whole like funeral service, all I could think about was like, what if she just popped up? What did she? And then I just randomly, I just wanted to go, she moved! I saw her! She moved! She's alive! She's still breathing! Maybe next open casket. Maybe next open casket, I'll do that. That I go to. I think I would. I think I would have an open casket funeral just because I want people to stare at me and be like, oh, he that was a way to go, because like my face is all gonna be like mangled up, and like, I want people to know, hey, this guy lived to the fullest, and he didn't have any body parts that, you know, were working at the time of his death. So yeah, I that was really bad. That was really weird. And then the next funeral that I went to, I think it was it my uncle? No. It was my cousin, my mom's friend, who was really close to my mom. Not my mom's friend, but my cousin. My mom's cousin. And we went to Oklahoma, and we stayed at this like, really nice place that his boss had let us stay at his house that he owned. And it was awesome. So all of our family, we stayed there. And I remember, for whatever reason, my mom and my other cousin there, they had us stay in this, me and my cousin's son. So I guess my cousin. So I'll use that a lot. It was just my cousins were there. We had a bye of a bunch of cousins. So so it was me and my mom and you know, her cousin and her son. We were there, and we were they made us stay in this room where they had these like life-size dolls that were really, I mean, they looked exact, like there was this one doll who looked exactly like Ray Charles, And he had the glasses, and he was doing this. He was smiling, and I, like, my cousin was like, I'm not staying in this room with that thing. Like, that thing's, like, the friggin' about to kill us. And I looked at it, and I'm thinking, yeah, that's messed up. And there was, like, another one of, like, a cowboy that was just really, like, intimidating. And I was thinking, oh, no, this is not going to end well for us. And so we was like, okay, well, we tried to stay there. We attempted to stay in that room one night. And I remember I went up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, and I looked at Ray Charles, and Ray Charles went like this. Come on. And he stopped smiling, and I honestly thought he got up and walked. Because I don't remember him being in that spot that by the door, which I was walking past. And I thought, I'm out. And I was like, Blair. Ray Charles stopped smiling at us. And so we both got up and left. And I don't remember anything after that other than, like, we did not stay in that room. That thing was messed up. Like, and I don't know what happened to Ray Charles after that. But it was, man... Gosh, I still have nightmares about that doll. So the funeral that was like the next day, and it was interesting. It was your typical, it went off without a hitch, and it was really sad because the guy was really young and he died of cancer. And the for whatever reason though, I remember we had like a party at the house that we were staying at after it was like an after funeral party where like people would come over for like cocktails and stuff. And then it turned into like, it turned into like a dance party. Like we all just like started like limboing. I don't know what happened there, but like everybody was like, hey, I don't know. It was a good person, man. Yeah. It was sad, man. Only the good die young. Yeah. Yeah. You want a limbo? Yeah, I'll limbo. Yeah, okay, yeah, let's limbo. And so we turned on the music and we were just limboing and playing pool. And I remember I had my first shot of Wild Turkey at that time period. And I was like, is this mourning? What? How does one mourn? You know, what am I doing? I'm mourning. This is me. I'm mourning. And I don't really know what to do, how to mourn. And I always thought, like, when I die, like, I always wondered what the people's reaction would be. Like, Uncle Ryan, he was nice. I could just see, like, when I pass away and I'm looking down from heaven, my niece is going, Uncle Ryan wouldn't have wanted us just to sit here and be sad about his passing. And I'd be thinking that, going, well, you know, actually, yeah, it'd be a little nice, a little kind of, a little upset. You know, and then they'd be like, yeah, the good news is that he's in a much better place right now. It's a blessing, really. Yeah, okay. Jeez, he was such a goofball, too. He didn't care what anybody thought, you know? You know, he would do anything to make people laugh, anything. well, not anything. And well, I'm just grateful that he's in a better place. Thank you, God. Let's all thank God for Ryan. Oh, come on, guys. Come on. Yeah, I'm going to miss him. Really? That's what I'm talking about. Thank you. Now, was that so hard? Was that so hard to say that you were going to miss me? But I'd rather him be up there than down here, you know? I'm just so glad he's not suffering anymore. Wow. God, can I go down there and scare them? Why not? Look at them. Look at them down there. Oh, God, look, they're dancing. They're dancing. Why are you dancing? Why are you having a good time? Stop dancing! Stop it! But people grieve differently. It was at that moment when I was at the funeral and when I was 17 and I was drinking Wild Turkey that I thought, you know, it's okay to have fun celebrating the life of someone. That grieving and mourning isn't just sitting around crying for several days on a couch. Because that's kind of honestly like what I thought it was. So I immediately just thought, you know, yeah, I'm going to celebrate. Celebrating a person's life by reminiscing in a fond way about the deceased, about loved ones. So, you know what? I limboed and it was fun. And somehow, it seemed right. Yeah, my mom's funeral, she was, there was like 700 people there. There was a lot of people there. And a lot of people that I hadn't seen in a while. So it was weird having people come up to you that you hadn't seen in a while. And I remember I wanted to make a speech at my mom's funeral. I wanted to say something. And I wanted to comfort people who were there. Because I remember that I said that God, you know, I thank God for my mom. I thank God for her life and taking her when she did and relieving her of this pain on this earth and forgiving her the amount of time that she did have. And I told stories, the report card story, because she'd freak me out. And then, like, whenever I would, like, date, you know, she would never like the girl that I'd bring home. She's like, Mom, yeah, you know, what do you think? Well, I think you guys should, like, separate. Like, you saw her for, like, 5 minutes. Yeah, I just don't, yeah, you guys, I don't know, maybe you guys should just separate. all right. So it was fun hearing people tell the stories about my mom and just knowing what a lady she was to have such an influence on so many people. I like that. I loved that she would, she had such an impact on her life. And that's what I took comfort in. I know that after that, though, I remember going, now we're going to have to deal with these issues with my dad. Because my dad, like, when people who struggle with alcohol, my dad, like, would text stuff, and I would have no idea. Like, it's not even, like, readable. And my dad was just texting all this stuff, and it was just to a point where it's like, oh, man, we're going to have this conversation, and that is not going to be fun. Having a conversation about, like, somebody with an addiction is never fun, especially when it's your own father. And you just, I was like, why am I having this, man? Why am I having this, like, conversation right now? What's going on here, man? What's going on here? Why am I trying to, what am I going to say? You know, like, what do you say when you talk to somebody who's struggling with alcohol? You have to be very careful with what you say. You have to kind of not come at it as from an emotional standpoint, but come at it from a standpoint of non-judgment and of love and of concern. And that's what I tried to do with my dad. And fortunately, we had my pastor help me out. Our pastor, me and my brother, once we spread my mom's ashes, we had my pastor come talk to my dad, and we were there for that. And we all kind of chimed in. And we were just concerned. We were concerned about him, and we all offered different ways to help him out. And he obviously was somewhat embarrassed by it and was in denial. And we kind of knew that he was going to be in denial. We knew that, you know, I didn't expect the reaction to, Dad, you know, I know that you have an issue, and we think that you have an issue of alcohol, and we're just really concerned with you, and we'd like to help you out here. And, you know, I didn't think that my dad would go, you're right, I need help. I need help, and where do you want me to go? I'll go there and pack my bags tonight. We knew that he wasn't going to say that. We knew that there was going to be resistance when we said, hey, we think you're struggling with alcohol. And we love you, and we hate to see this. We just lost our mom. We don't want to lose you either. And my dad was just like, I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem. I don't know what you guys are talking about. And come to find out, he was really, like, he would send us an email. He sent us an email, like, maybe, like, a week after that, when I was back in Chicago. And he was like, you know, you guys embarrassed me there. The neighbors could hear you. And I don't think they couldn't. And he's like, I don't have a problem with alcohol. You guys don't know what it's like to live with your mom knowing that she's going to be with Jesus. And just using that kind of, like, playing the victim card. And The thing is that he felt a lot of regrets, and he felt he had a lot of guilt for what he did to my mom and the way that he took care of her and or lack thereof. And we loved him, though. He was our dad. He was a great dad growing up. He was my dad, and I'm still very protective of him. If anybody says anything bad about him, I'm still really protective of him because he was a great dad, and he taught me a lot about life and taught me a lot about growing up and what it's like to be a parent and the responsibility. He took that seriously. He was always there for me and my brother, always. So now was our time. Now was my time to be there for him. And obviously he was in denial, and you can't help anybody out who doesn't want to get help. You can't just force him to go get help. So we're like, okay, well, you know, we got to wait till it gets to a point where there's going to be he's going to have to get like a DUI or something. And then we're going to have to give him an ultimatum. Hey, look, it's either that or us. And I was hoping that it wouldn't get to that point, but it did. It got to that point, and he would just call. I'd get calls like from like at midnight, or I'd get calls from like midnight from my brother going, "Hey, what's up? So dad, dad's been like, you know, Holly just called me, and dad's been like walking around with his barefoot on, and this is like January in Kansas City. He's been walking around outside, and the neighbors saw him, and they're just like really concerned. Or dad, like, you know, dad got into an accident with his car, and nobody knows really exactly like what happened. It's just his car's in the shop now. He got into an accident and says it was another person's fault, but nobody can, you know, the guy drove off." And it was just really, there was a lot of suspicion there. And I don't want to be like one to, again, still judge, because when a disease takes over, it takes over, man. It takes over. And I know that he was really battling with this. And I remember, like, you know, having conversations with him, you know, because I'd get texts from my friend who was a police officer at the time going, "Your dad, he's walking around, he looks like a homeless person, and he broke his arm, and he's not looking good." So I gave him a call. And when I was in, after I got that text saying my dad's, he's not looking good. He just broke his arm, and I was like, "Hey, what's up, man? You need to get help." He's like, "Ryan, I tripped. Okay. I tripped, you know." And he always tripped over the dog. And it was like, "Dad, you're doing this. This is like way too much. You know, this is not a coincidence. You need help. You're drinking again. We know you are. Stop this. And either you get help, or look, you know, I'm done dealing with you right now." And so I told him that, but like, he was like one of those guys that like, I had that conversation with him like 3 or 4 times. And so I'm like, "Dad, I'm done dealing with you. Unless you get help, unless you tell me right now you're going to go get help and that you have an issue, I'm right now, I can't talk to you." And he was like, "Okay, yeah, okay, all right. I don't need help. And so he'd hang up. And then like the next day, he'd call like nothing. We didn't have that conversation the day before. He'd be like, "Hey, how you doing, buddy? Yeah. So I'm, you know, about to walk the dog, and you know, about to watch KU basketball." I'm like, "Dad, do you remember the conversation that we had before, that yesterday?" "What?" "No," I was like, "Dad, you need to get help, Dad. I mean, I know that you're, it's a mess right now for you. I know you're struggling right now, but you need to get help." "Ryan, I don't need to get help. I don't need to get help." I was like, "Okay, Dad, like, then we can't have a conversation because you're not willing to help yourself out." And so he hung up. The next day I get a call. "Hey, what's up, buddy? How you doing?" And it just kept on going on. It was like we never had that conversation. He just wanted to, like, maybe he thought like I would forget. I don't know, but he did that. And I know a lot of people wanted to help him out. A lot of people, our neighbors included, wanted to help him with his issues. And so he was definitely loved, though. And we all, to this day, I still wonder exactly what I could have done more to help him. I kind of wish I would have moved back to Kansas City to take care of him, but I don't know if that would have done any good. Like, I don't know. I didn't want to be a babysitter at the time, honestly. So, he goes in and he has this like conversation. So that happened a lot, actually. So I'm trying to, like, we did that. We had those conversations, and I would get calls from my guys who was like, "Hey, is this Ryan McChesney?" I was like, "Yeah. Well, Ryan, I'm officer, you know, I'm off duty right now, but I'm Officer Steve, and I just want to let you know that your dad fell in Walgreens, and he's actually in the hospital right now because he had a fall." And I'm thinking, what? He was in the hospital because he had a fall, and I guess he had some issues. I'm not exactly sure what the issues were at that time. I forget, actually, and I have a great memory, but I remember that he was in and out of the hospital a lot. And so we, whenever he'd get out of the hospital, because he had detox in the hospital, he'd always look great and feel good. And then next thing you know, he's back in the hospital, and I get a call from, like, "Hi, this is, the nurse ER from Kansas City ER, and your dad, he's in the hospital. He had a fall and bumped his head or something happened, and he was in the ER, and my brother went and saw him, and while he was detoxing, my brother went and saw him, and I guess he was just so angry at my brother, and he was just yelling at him, calling him names, and going, oh my gosh, and, you know, Chase, damn it. And he was just, that's what happens when you're detoxing. You have to get that toxins out of your system. So he did that. And I went and I left to go back home after Chase said he couldn't be there anymore because he had to go back to work. So I went, and when I saw him at the hospital and he woke up and he saw me, and I was like, "Hey, what's up?" He's like, "Hey, what's up?" And he looked okay. And it was at that point in February of 2013 that he finally admitted to me in the hospital, to a nurse too, that he has an issue and he wants to go get help. And one of the nurses there said that he had high alcohol level in his system. And one of the nurses there said, "Hey, look, you know, I just want to let you know that to him, I just want to let you know that I've been struggling with alcohol too. And I attend AA meetings, and it's a struggle, but it's really helped me out." And she gave him the information, and I thought, that's amazing. That's awesome. And he at that time, he admitted, he's like, "I have a problem. I want to start going to meetings. And I'm going, this is a huge praise God. And so I'm on the phone to my pastor, you know, calling him and saying all that stuff and telling him that, hey, you know, he said, finally admitted that he needs help. So that's when my pastor again stepped in and was willing to help him out and was willing to do things for him and going over to his house, even though, like, apparently there was a few times where my dad cussed my pastor Francis out a couple times. And I just was like, I can't imagine the patience that Pastor Francis had, but, you know, we all loved him. We all loved my dad. So he was willing to help him out. And my dad at that point, he started to get better. He started to get better, and that's where I really struggle with that. When I saw him in February of 2013, my dad, I thought, should I stay here? Should I stay here with him to help him in this time? And I regret not doing that. I regret not staying there that time when we got out of the hospital, because he looked okay, and I thought, man, if I leave, he'll probably go back to, you know, doing his regular thing where he just takes a bunch of medication and alcohol, and it's not going to be helpful. And I really struggled with that. And I remember going on that plane there, and that was the same night, I think, that we got Obama. I don't remember. Or not Obama, but Osama bin Laden. Freudian slip there. But it was... I was really wrestling with that, honestly. And looking back, I probably should have stayed home. If I would have stayed home, my dad would probably still be alive at that time, instead of going to Chicago and trying to continue to live my life there. But I can't let that continually weigh on me. Because it has sometimes. It has weighed on me a few times. But at some point, my dad had to be his own decision maker, and he had to be responsible for his own actions there. And I really think that during that time period, he really did want to get better. And a lot of people saw him around town. A lot of my family and friends would call me up and say, "Hey, we saw your dad at the grocery store, and he looked good." And it was, we had a real long conversation with him. And I gotta be honest with you, Ryan. He was, you know, really introspective and really seemed like he wanted to get better. And I thought, that's awesome. And I was excited to hear that. And things were looking up. And then I got a call from my, I got a call from my dad, actually. Yeah, I got a call from my dad, and he said, "I'm in the hospital again." Again? Yeah, I had a spill, and, you know, they're gonna, you know, run some tests on me, and you know, I'll probably be in here for a day or so. So, you know, don't worry about me, though. Don't worry about me. And it was around that time where I got a text from my cousin Mike, who was like, "Hey," or got a call from him and a text saying, "Hey, I went to your dad's house, and your guys' house that you guys used to live in and your dad lives in right now is a mess. It's got blood everywhere, and just not, it's not good. It's not good at all." So, and he would send me pictures, and then I'd get, like, that's the thing that really kind of irritates me, is that a lot of people, like, I remember I started to get, was getting advice from a lot of people at that point in time as to what to do. And I didn't really need that, because I kind of knew where I was like, okay, this is gonna, you know, this is not good. I know I had to have a conversation with him again. And I know that this is an end for me too. Like, where I'm like, you know, I can't do this anymore with you, Dad. You need to get better. So I knew I was going to have that conversation with him, but I was like getting bombarded with a bunch of people throwing their two cents in as to what I should say. And I thought, don't do that, by the way. If somebody that you know is going through a tough situation and dealing with an alcoholic or a loved one, at the death of a family member, just be there for them. You know, you don't need to give them advice unless they really come to you and ask for it. Don't really give them advice, because I mean, it was just creating more stress for me, because I was like, what are you doing? Stop it. Just let me process this for a minute, and then I'll figure out exactly, like, prayerfully what to do. So that was the plan, though. I was going to call my dad up, and I was going to say, "Look, man, I can't have this conversation with you. You know, you need to get better. I'm sick of this." So I called my dad, and with a message. And so I left him a message saying, "Hey, you need to call me back. What's up?" And it was probably about 2 o'clock that night where I got a call from the nurse. I was up. Ryan was up that night. I was in Chicago. It was in May. Daddy was up. Daddy was up doing his thing. And by that, I mean up watching, like, clips on YouTube. But I was up, so I got a call from the doctor. She's like, "Hey, Ryan, this is Dr. Grounds. I have your dad here. I've been taking care of him. I want to let you know, though, that he has coded, and we found that his alcohol level was really high, and that during his, you know, because he was, you know, detoxing and trying to figure out, like, his body was rejecting that, and he started to code, and I wanted to share with you, because you're the next of kin." And she was, and that's all I heard. And she went on about different things, but that's all I heard. And then I remember the first thing I asked her, I was like, so what was your, wait, you said your name was Dr. Grounds? Yeah. Is your first name Jill? Yeah. Wait, I went to school with you. I know. I didn't want to bring that up. I was like, what, this, yeah. So how you been? I what do you say to that at that point? So I heard that he coded, and he was, at that point, he was brain dead. And I didn't know if the activity was going to improve. I was hoping that it was going to improve, but it was 2 o'clock at night. And, there was really nothing I could do except for, get some sleep. And which is like a terrible thing to like have happen to you, like right before like you're trying to go to bed. Like it's like, oh, by the way, your dad coded and he might not get up for it, but we'll wait and see in the morning. I was like, how do you sleep on that? So I didn't really get a good night's sleep. And so the first thing that I did when I woke up that night or woke up that next morning was I text my brother and then I got on the phone with a bunch of people saying, hey, this is what's going on. We need your prayers. And again, I remember talking to my uncle and at that again, and he was, you know, kind of, honestly, he was giving me advice and I was like, dude, you don't need to do this. You don't need to do this. I know what I'm going to do. I know what I need to be done. I'm going to wait to see what the nurse says before I make the decision to fly back down. And he's like, well, you know, I'm just saying I would want to fly down. And I was thinking, I can't have this conversation with, like, I understand, like, I don't need you to give me your input on this right now. Like, that's not, you're not helping things out. And then he was obviously, well, your brother's way's not working. And I thought, really? Like, because my brother used the tough love. My brother says, hey, look, because my brother at that time had... two nieces, or my brother had, no, my brother at that time had, it was a newborn, yeah, had a newborn baby at that time, and he was like, you can't see your granddaughter unless you straighten up, which is like, yeah, that's a normal thing to say, to do to an alcoholic who's not acting rationally. So, finally, I just said to my uncle, I was like, uncle, look, I love you, man, but like, I've been through this enough that I kind of know how I'm going to approach this. So I hung up with my uncle thinking, really, man, why, what's going on? Why don't, I was really frustrated at that point because he was just interjecting himself in something that I didn't think he should interject himself into and give me advice that I didn't really need. So I called the nurse and the nurse is like, he's not looking good. You guys are going to have to make a decision. You know, if this doesn't improve. So that was all I needed to hear. And so I got on the first plane back and it was pretty scary. And I remember just like flying on that plane. Like I was getting late. It was late that time. And so I was on that plane with people who were like, it was like a marching band group that was like celebrating that they were like going to some place. It was like, oh, that, yeah, they were coming back from Kansas. They were coming back from Chicago. They were going to Kansas City. They're coming back from something. And they played this huge event in Chicago and they were celebrating and they were all like having a good time partying. And I'm going, shut up, everybody. Cause I knew that my dad wasn't going to make it. And I knew that it didn't look good. And the one thing I didn't want to do though, was see my dad brain dead for the rest of his life. If this was what was going to happen, I would hope that he would go peacefully. And it was really not a fun place to be in. And also at that time, like we went, I mean, it was definitely difficult having to have that flight back. And especially with the people around you celebrating, you're just like, I'm not in the mood for this. I'm not. So I got there and then the most difficult part about that and this whole, like with, especially with both my parents passing, the most difficult part about that was watching my grandparents have to deal with the loss of their sons or daughters. That was always heartbreaking. That was always really, really heartbreaking to me, having to go through that. So my grandma, my was in denial, actually. That was the saddest part, too. My grandma was in denial, and I just remember having to... You know, I knew that we would have to, there came a point in time where we would have to make that decision. And my grandma would not go along with us when we knew that we were going to have to, it wasn't really a decision, it was his decision. We just had to find the will, which like trying to get the will, we did like an Indiana Jones. It was like Raiders of the Lost Ark, trying to find my dad's like will where he said, do not resuscitate. That was, That was difficult, trying to get all of the information they had, because it was like in a lockbox at a bank. And then, so we'd have to go to the bankers. Hey, by the way, our dad is dying, and our mom has died. So we need to find the will, because he's not, I mean, he's not looking good. And you know, like he's you know, on tubes right now, living on, he's like a vegetable. And so the bankers, we would tell them this, and they would just start crying. So I was like, yeah, so can you help us out? And I remember that we had to have like five different things in order to get into my dad's lockbox, in my dad's safety box. We had the will, just to see if he had, and because we knew that like that's where the will was. Wherever we had, I mean, we were searching the house, we were searching every place to find his will, because we knew that would be, I mean, he did have a do not resuscitate, but we just needed it in the will. And so we opened it up, got into the bank, and were able to get the will. And sure enough, it said do not resuscitate. So we brought it back to the surgeon, and my grandma was having none of that. My grandma, she just was like, the doctor said 2 or 3 more days. Like, we need to give him 2 or 3 more days. And we're like, grandma, it's not going to happen, grandma. Like, I mean, it was so heartbreaking trying to have that conversation that was like, look, we're going to take him off life support. And this is exactly what he would want. This is what it says in his will. This is what his orders are. So it's not even really our decision. And she just was so angry about that. She was like, the doctor said 2 or 3 more days. And I'm thinking, who said that? So it was just a big mess at that point. And I understand completely her reluctancy to do that. Honestly, I understand that 100%. I probably would do the same thing if it were my child. So it was so heartbreaking to have that conversation with her. It's like, hey, look, grandma, we're going to take dad off life support. So we're going to do it tomorrow. And it's just, that's, we're going to see what happens after that. So we took him off life support. And he, within a minute, he was passed away. And the weird thing about that was that once we took him off, he just started to, like, he couldn't breathe. It was just, you could see him going. And it was incredibly, I had to turn my head because I couldn't even really watch. And my sister-in-law, she was freaking out. And it was just, it wasn't, it was pretty traumatizing, actually. It was pretty traumatizing. I'm thinking, how did we get here? How did we get here? And there's a lot of questions that I still have about exactly, like, how did that happen? How did both my parents die like that? Why would God allow that? And why didn't God heal my mom or, you know, take care of my dad when he needed it? And I honestly, I'll be 100% honest. There's a lot of times where I still wrestle with that, but I also know that there is an evil force too, that has a high influence on. And once you have those addictions, it's really difficult to get rid of. And I think in my dad's case, he just had a lot of demons that he couldn't get rid of, and this was God's way of saying, "Hey, come with me." And I, to this day, I still miss him and still want to protect him, because he struggled a lot during his last few years of his life. I remember at his funeral, you know, when we were deciding to do what to do, planning my dad's funeral, one of the things was we were just meeting with our pastor at his house, and luckily, honestly, the best thing that we had was that we had a church family that was really nurturing to us during that time period, that took care of us during that time period. Me and my brother and my newborn niece, they was definitely definitely wouldn't have been able to get through that without them. So I just am eternally grateful for them and all their help during that time period. I was at my pastor's house, and we were thinking about, what do we do for my dad's funeral? What do we do? I was just shooting the breeze, telling funny stories, and then I would just go into impersonating my dad, because my dad had this, like, funny way of, like, talking. Like, he had all these sayings, and it was, a lot of them were like, phew. He would, like, when he'd come home from work, he'd go, phew, I have got to go to the bathroom. Now, I mean, that's the first thing he would, like, bolt to, like, I mean, that's the first thing he would say to us. Like, hey, Dad, how you doing? Phew, I have got to go to the bathroom. So you go to the bathroom, come out, like, phew, much better. And then he would coach our baseball teams, and he'd always say, fundamental baseball, gentlemen. Like the cliches, man. Fundamental baseball, gentlemen. Fundamental baseball. Hey, you're going to hit it. Hit it. I own the ball. I own the ball. Just like the batting cage. Just like the batting cage. And then he tried to whistle, and he was a terrible whistler, so he would put two hands at his mouth and just go. when he tried to get our attention, and it was he got our attention, but we just laughed at him. Whenever he would try to joke around with us, he'd always shake his head, and he'd always go, oh no, oh no, oh no, 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 oh please, oh please. And that, he had his, like, laugh too. And he always, like, try wipe away, like, fake tears. Like, And so he always had these sayings. And, I don't know. If you're my family, like, I would love to hear more. I know I'm leaving a lot out, right now off the top of my head. But he's like, Yeah, he just was so fun to be around and to have fun with, and Dad, burn it, Dad, burn it. I don't know what that is, or it doesn't take a Jack Frost to realize a snow job. When we'd go out to, like, in public, he would find a way to say that almost every time, because he knew that, like, somebody would laugh at that. And, like, the waiter would be like, hey, you know, you want some water? You guys thirsty? And the guy would, like, and my dad would be like, yeah, it doesn't take a Jack Frost to realize a snow job. And the waiter would laugh, because you have to do that when you don't know what the guy's talking about. You just laugh politely. But I love sharing memories of them. I love sharing memories of my parents. And that's what I want this podcast to be. I want this podcast to be something where, people who are going through grief, who are going through battling, different levels of grief, or even battling types of, addiction or family members or loved ones with addiction. I want this to be a resource for you guys, because I've been through that. I've seen it. And I feel called to do this. So I'm Ryan McChesney. I hope that you guys stick with me through this. I hope that this podcast is helpful, and that just together we can kind of get through some difficult times that you know we've gone through in life, and to share that and to be each other's shoulder right now. So I hope that you guys are having a great day. I hope that you guys are having a good week. I'll be back here next week. I think I'll be talking to, hopefully I'll be talking to a few people who have been dealing with the different levels of grief and have gone through the struggle of the death of a parent or a loved one. So that's me. I'm Ryan McChesney. Like me on Facebook and in real life. Thank you.